Okay, welcome back. Pulling together more coronavirus stories for this Friday evening's news batch, as we'll be posting it very soon. Dr. Fauci is warning that coronavirus infection rates are too high already heading into the fall and winter. Too high. I haven't read that one. I just saw it. Just pulled it up. There are a lot of stories here, a lot of different angles. As we said weeks ago, the entire texture of covering and reporting on the coronavirus pandemic worldwide is very difficult. It's changed. $28 trillion done so far to the world economy. That was a major estimate done yesterday. We did run that in the news. It's up there right now. Another one, we destroyed the world's greatest economy for no reason. And the person is talking about how Sweden handled things, I guess. Let's see. Coronavirus fallout. Gates claims the fall, this fall, this goes with Fauci, is going to be worse than the summer. Interesting. Fauci also told Americans today to bite the bullet and sacrifice their Thanksgiving holiday this year. Not going to go over too well. Denver is now requiring mask wearing outdoors and limits gatherings to 5 people at the most as their cases continue to rise. Remdesivir has little or no effect, that's a quote, in reducing coronavirus deaths. That out of the World Health Organization grab bag of goodies today. University of Utah Hospital over capacity as the unsustainable coronavirus outbreak continues. Meanwhile, the ex-FDA commissioner says lockdowns are no longer necessary. Senior U.S. Army official says there'll never be a return to normal after coronavirus. Okay, that's enough for now. There'll be a lot more going up there. Dr. Henry Nyman is with us tonight, as always, on Friday to wrap things up. Henry, what a week it was, and let's jump into it. Go right ahead. Welcome back.
Well, it's good to be back. There's quite a bit of news. Trump did a town hall yesterday and he was kind of grilled by the moderator, the man that got 3 on his testing on. Correct, on NBC. He was competing with Biden on ABC, and guess which one got the larger audience?
I honestly don't know. I didn't watch. Which one?
Let's put it this way. Donald would not be happy. Biden outpolled him 15 million to 13 million, even though it's on 3 different stations for Trump. All of them combined didn't match ABC's. So,
all right. Did you get a chance to watch any of the Biden?
I saw highlights of the Biden. He mostly talked about policy and was much more of a calm and straightforward. These are the plans. This is what I'm going to do. This is what needs to be done. This is the pandemic has to get under control.
Right.
And Trump's was wild and woolly. And started out with questions.
Yeah.
Well, he's at a level that is really hard to imagine how he converted any listeners. I mean, he was he's very defensive, talked a lot about the coronavirus, especially at the beginning, kind of admitted he had pneumonia, but, you know, just said something funny with his lungs. He kind of admitted he didn't get tested before the debate. He said, maybe I did, maybe I didn't. They said, well, that was a requirement for the debate. Well, I don't know, the doctors do it. You know, I don't know what the results are, what they're doing. And I don't know the date. And, do you get tested every day? No, I don't do it that often. But I get tested a lot. So he was very evasive about his testing. And then he, the two bigger stories out of that were the mask that, they kind of talked about, if everybody wore the mask, it'd be, going forward by the end of the year, there'd be like 80,000 lives that saved. Well, there was this one study that said 85% of the ones that wore masks got the virus. And they said, no, that's not what the study said. Well, that's the way I heard it. And he's a fool. The study he's talking about was a study to look at risk factors. And they were asking, interviewing people that had got the COVID to find out, what kind of behaviors they were doing to see if they could identify risky behavior. And the risky behavior that stood out was going to bars and restaurants. And those activities kind of doubled the likelihood that they were going to get the virus. And then they threw in that, this happened even though 85% of those who got infected routinely wore a mask. But, that is basically saying that, they were wearing a mask and they still got infected, although that wasn't saying that they were wearing a mask and they got infected while wearing a mask, because most people that go to restaurants and bars take the mask off in the restaurant and bars.
Or because they have to put the food in their mouth and the drink down their throats.
Right. And they're sitting at a table and they're near other people and they're likely to get infected. And that's why they had twice as high a rate. It's risky behavior in restaurant eating or drinking is risky business, so to speak. So the bottom line from the study was that in spite of wearing a mask, 85% of those that did wear masks got infected anyway. And Trump just flipped that on his head and said that 85% of people who wear masks get infected, essentially saying that wearing a mask made you more likely to be infected because 85% of the population hasn't been infected. So he got it totally wrong, and he kept repeating that. He did that there. He said that at rallies. And so he's essentially putting out this false information. Nobody said that but him, or I don't know, maybe somebody on Fox News said it. But CDC didn't say it. And there's no data that supports it. It's totally false. And he's using that to say, well, I'm for masks, but, they 85% of those that wear masks get infected, which is nonsense.
Hold on. The other side of the coin is the Biden town hall,
let's hear this.
which not a word was mentioned about the Biden and the Biden son's shenanigans.
Oh, please,
at Burisma.
Please, hold it. Yeah, right. That is, the FBI has already said that is Russia propaganda being fed to Giuliani to take to Trump. And they've already banned it.
I'm not a believer in Russian propaganda, but that's okay. I respect your opinion.
Right.
That's fine.
It's not my opinion. It's a fact. It's an FBI statement.
I don't trust the FBI.
That's not my. That's not my opinion. Right? Exactly.
At all.
Exactly. You got that right. So there's two worlds out there. There's the reality, and then there's what you.
All right. Henry's just getting a little bit again. It's wonderful to get science from Henry, but when he gets off on this personal hate of Trump, it doesn't do anybody any good. So let's see if we can get him back. Are you there, Henry? Sounded like he might have bumped the phone. Hard to say. There you are. You're back. Okay.
Yeah,
let's do some science here now. Let's just get away from this.
That basically is what the FBI report is based on. It's based on hard intelligence. And, you know, you can say, well, I don't believe it. You can say the same thing about the science.
No, I find Comey and the FBI to be despicable, but that's my opinion. I try not to bring it up, but that's my opinion.
Jeff, reality check. Comey wasn't there. This is the current FBI director, the one appointed by Trump.
Ray?
He said that Giuliani is interacting with a known Russian agent, and the Russian agent is giving him fake documents. The metadata on those emails,
right,
they were created a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
That is pure garbage. There is zero data. It's carried by one newspaper, The Post, and Facebook and Twitter have already...
New York Post, right?
Right.
Okay.
And Facebook and Twitter have already blocked the distribution of those links for that story. So there's quite a bit out there that says it's not a real story.
And update you on this, Twitter has completely reversed its position now and is carrying the full Hunter Biden story. Jack Dorsey
with a notice.
That's fine. That's their right. It's a private company. They have flipped 180.
No, they haven't flipped 180. They've allowed you to see it, but with a notice that says it's not real. So they didn't flip anything. They just made it available so you could read the nonsense instead of have it look like they're trying to hide the nonsense.
Did you see the nonsense photos of him?
No. Listen,
you
I'm not going to listen to this. No,
well,
I
don't
didn't.
Say you're not going to listen to this. I just ask you, did you see the photos?
No, I didn't see the photos.
Right. Well,
it
might be good to take a look at the photos.
I heard about the email. I heard the story that they got his laptop and they were making repairs and they discovered this.
He left it and abandoned it is what happened. That's why the guy looked at the hard drive. And he freaked out. Anyhow, let's do science here.
Right.
Come on. That's your strength. You're a brilliant scientist.
I mean, that story is so absurd.
Okay. All right. That's your opinion. That's fine. I appreciate it.
Yeah, that's a fact. That's the FBI statement. Listen, when I give an FBI statement, that's a fact. That's not my opinion.
Okay? It's your opinion as to whether it's a fact
opinion,
or not.
Your opinion is you don't believe the FBI statements, even though they're
not
were
all
done
of them, no. They've been caught
Trump
lying many times. Okay, let's do science.
This is the new director of the FBI.
Science. Forget the FBI. Let's do science on this virus and find out where we're going this fall. We're heading into flu season. That's a big problem. People are very worried about that. And we need to help them. Give them guidance. How are they going to know which is which? Do they go, if they get a flu-like symptom, do they run for a test? Or do they just deal with it for a few days? What do you suggest? People want guidance more than anything.
Okay, here's my personal guidance boots on the ground. The flu season really hasn't gotten going yet. I looked at the flu view and there's virtually zero cases so far. It's possible that there
none
won't be
interesting
as many.
Well,
it's early. It's early.
Right.
It's early.
All
the
right.
Flu season usually gets going, you know, the middle of October, and the flu view comes out weekly, but it's gonna have data from a week prior, you know, the week ending, you know, 1 or 2 weeks earlier. So it's kind of got data through the beginning of the month. And so that's a little bit before things get going on the flu season. In the Southern Hemisphere, the flu season was relatively mild. And it was mild because of COVID. And COVID would reduce the flu season two ways. One way would be through competing cytokines that are made against the SARS-CoV-2 would also inhibit the flu virus, and therefore the flu is in some sense competing with COVID. And then the other factor that would keep the flu season down would because most countries in the world do have a fairly liberal use of masks and social distancing. And both of those, and including the Southern Hemisphere during flu season, because they've had a lot of COVID, particularly like in South America.
Well, Brazil, Argentina. Yeah.
Right. So as a result, they're encouraged to wear masks and socially distance, and that would be effective. That would affect the ability of the flu virus to transmit. So that would also be another reason that the flu season may not be as serious as it would under, you know, other conditions where people aren't wearing masks and they aren't battling a virus that has infected, I think, 30 million people now worldwide and 8 million in the United States. So one of the recommendations is to get a flu shot. I actually did get a flu shot today, and it was actually harder than it had been in the past to get the Fusil back.
To get the what back?
It's called Flucell Vax. It stands for flu and cell and vax. And the reason
still a quad?
It's a quad, but it's grown in MDCK cells. So these are canine kidney cells. So they're mammalian cells.
Right.
And that processes the virus more like you would process a virus, and it glycosylates it, whereas if the virus is grown in eggs, it doesn't have all of those glycosylation events. And in the past, I really haven't had any trouble getting that particular version. And in Pittsburgh, I had to make a lot of phone calls to actually find somebody that had it in stock. So I did end up finding it, but I had to call like three different distributors. I usually get it in CVS, were out.
Yeah,
and then I tried it at the local supermarket, and they were carrying something different. And then I tried Rite Aid, and the one nearby was out, but I ended up, you know, going out of the area and got one. So it was harder to find. I'm not sure why it was that difficult, because it's relatively early in the flu season.
Was there a demand factor? Did anyone tell you? We've been overloaded with demand?
I would assume that the two that were out would be a demand factor, because they both carried it, but they didn't have any in stock. And that just surprised me that would happen at this stage.
Well, we may have a flu vax shortage then, eh?
Right. I was very specific about this one in particular. So none of them said they didn't have a flu shot, but they all said they didn't have flu cell vax. And flu cell vax has become very popular. And when I first started taking it several years ago, here in Pittsburgh, CVS was about the only one that was carrying it. And more recently, everybody was carrying it, but I still couldn't get it. So anyway, that's the boots on the ground. Now would be the time if you're going to get a flu shot. This would usually be a good time to get it because the flu season hasn't really got going. And if you get it, you know, during flu season, you run the risk that you get infected with the virus before the vaccine that take effect.
It's good for 1 year. Right. It's a yearly. It's an annual.
Yeah, it's good for a year, but it's not clear that that's why some people suggest that you take it about now, because there's some evidence that it really lasts for 3 or 4 months. So if you take it too early, then it'll start fading before the end of the flu season. But yeah, it is normally people get it annually. They get a new shot each year. And as you mentioned, most of them are quadrivalent, so that they have both H1N1, the swine H1N1, H3N2, and the two different influenza bees.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's out there. But of much greater concern is the start of the fall wave for COVID. And there doesn't seem to be much doubt. I had said on Wednesday that the numbers were starting to creep up, and this is when it would normally be expected. One other clue that now is going to be expected is Pence isn't saying, I haven't seen the second wave, because now is the time you would expect to see the second wave, and it's very hard to miss. As I had mentioned previously, that the second wave is very different than the first wave, which is the Herald wave. The Herald wave is a virus that's just jumped species, is trying to kind of get established. It comes up kind of spotty, one location, then another location. And I use the swine flu as an example on how mild it was in the spring and how much more widespread and had a significant impact in the fall. And I said the same thing would happen with COVID. The front page of the New York Times today had three different graphs, three different maps of the U.S. showing outbreaks. The first one showed the outbreaks in the spring, and they showed the activity in the Northeast and then, you know, three or four major cities like the Detroit area, the Chicago area, the New Orleans area, and then the Northeast. And there was a lot of white space on the map where locations really had minimal activity. And then they showed a second map, which was the peak over the summer. And that map showed a lot of activity in the South, you know, going from the Southeast all the way over to Texas and a little bit in California. And that didn't have nearly as much white space, but it was really concentrated all across the South and a little bit up the East Coast, but mostly the Southeastern states. And then they showed the current situation, and they showed that most of the map was covered, and wasn't all covered yet, but there was major outbreaks in the upper Midwest, in the Rocky Mountain states. There was still activity in the South.
Oh, and Colorado's having
to pick up in the North.
Big trouble. Look, you've been saying this.
Colorado's having big
trouble. The numbers are going up.
Montana's having big trouble. Idaho is north and south. Dakota is. Wisconsin is. So all of those are at a level where they're running out of beds. But the numbers are starting to go up. And I had said that I thought that by the end of this week, like as of today, that the number of cases would get up to 60,000. And just to give you an idea of the number.
I know what the number
was.
How
they're changing.
You were too conservative. It went over 60.
Right. And today it's going to get just about up to 70. So wow. It's Tuesday it was, now these are just for the 50 states in the District of Columbia. It doesn't include, you know, VA or prisoners or territories. And so just for the U.S. 51 jurisdictions, on Tuesday it was 52,900. On Wednesday it was 55,700. On Thursday it was 62,800. And today, I still don't have anything from Missouri and don't have an update from New York, but it's a 66,500. Missouri's been running at 2,500 a day, so that would bring it up to 69,000 and it could be another 1,000 coming from California before the end of the day. I've got it through 6:30 in California. So it's going to get up to 69 or 70,000 today. And so the numbers are going up pretty dramatically. And the reason these numbers are more dramatic than they were in the summer is in the summer, the vast majority of the cases were coming from just three states. They were coming from Florida, Texas, and California. And at the peak, each of those states was doing around 10,000 a day. Sometimes they get up to 15,000. So between those three states, they were doing between 30 and 35,000 of the cases. And so that was, you know, more than half of the entire country. And those three states were kind of peaking at the same time. So when they were peaking in August or so, it was getting up to, a little higher than it is today. It got up to 77,000, but that was for one day. So it got up into the 60s and into the low 70s over, you know, a period of time. And then it dropped down to around 40,000. So Fauci had said when it was at 40,000 that it was too high and that it would be good if the number got below 10,000 going into the fall, because he, as most scientists, anticipated that the fall there would be a rise. There would be the potential of both flu and COVID, but there'd be a good chance that COVID numbers would go up. And that's exactly what has been happening. And I had said previously that the thing that would be different about the fall is that it wouldn't be as, you know, spotty areas in one location to another location. In the fall, it would start showing up everywhere at about the same time. It would be kind of like the flu season. The flu season, if you follow the weekly maps, you go and you see initially it says it's sporadic or it's local or it's moderate, and then the map fills up, and by January, it's high levels everywhere. So, you know, a lot, like every state is red, you know, they color code it. And so it switches over. It takes a little bit of time, but eventually flu is in all 50 states. And that's what is expected to happen with the COVID. And it's kind of already moving in that direction. So some of these states that you mentioned are ones that were kind of starting to go up a few months ago or so. And they're kind of sparsely populated, but they're still getting good numbers. And they're filling up the ICUs, and they're advertising to try to get healthcare workers to come to the area because they're running out of personnel. And the ones that were having the highest per capita rates were ones that were, not that, densely populated. So, you know, like I mentioned, it was North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana. Now it's Idaho, it's Utah, and and these states are all running into problems. And Wisconsin is another one that's got these numbers up, and they're running.
So is Gates right when he says the fall is going to be worse than the summer? You just basically said that. I think all indications are that
the summer got up to 77,000 for one day. That was the highest day. And it was mostly in the 60s. Today is already up to 70. And I think it'll hit an all-time high next week. So it usually goes down for the weekend, and then it kind of works its way up Tuesday through Friday. And that's exactly what I read is the numbers. They usually don't go up that dramatically. They normally, barely beat the prior days, but they gradually go up. So more typically, it would go from the low 40s to the mid 40s, go up 10% over those days. And this one has gone up, significantly more than that. It's gone from 50,000 to 70,000. So it's already there. It's already at the summer level, and it's just started to go up. It started a little bit earlier with some of these less densely populated states, but the numbers are starting to go up, and they're going up pretty significantly. I was going to give you a couple examples of states that saw big increases. Texas got up to almost 6,000 cases today, so that's a big number. And Illinois is the one that stands out. Illinois got up to 5,000 cases today. They got up to 4,000 cases yesterday. Both of those are records. And there's a few others that California was around 3,000. Florida was 3,400. Texas, like I said, was 5,800. But Wisconsin,
let me ask you this example.
It's up to 3,800, which is an all-time high.
Are we doing more testing? Are we doing wider-based testing?
No, they're doing less testing. So,
wow.
They cut back on the testing. This isn't a testing issue. The numbers that are going up is not just in cases. The number of hospitalizations are going up. The deaths have not gone up yet, but they're a trailing indicator. So the deaths are kind of flat. They're a little, well, they're creeping closer to 1,000. Today it was 852. Like I say, there's still a few states that are missing. But it was 852 today. It was 872 yesterday. And, actually, I think there was one anomaly. It got up to 940 the day before. But they're generally under 1,000. But that's not a leading indicator. First, the hospitals fill up, and then the patients get sicker, and then they end up in the ICU, and then they end up dying. And so the deaths are going to trail. But the hospitalizations are up. The number of cases are up. And as some schools are already talking about sending students home, of course, the students are going to come home with the virus. And then, holidays are coming up. Mm-hmm. Thanksgiving's coming up. That's why Fauci was saying,
What do you think about that statement?
I think it's a true story. The problem is, you can kind of take precautions and get people tested, but by Thanksgiving time, it might be hard to get a test and a rapid turnaround. If you can get a result, one way to do it is to get tested, right before the holiday and make sure you're not carrying the virus. But then you still run the risk of, depends, how far you're going. If you're going to travel and go to airports and kind of, get in crowds that are traveling, then you're running the risk that you're going to get infected en route. And then by the time you get to your destination, you'll be infected, and a few days later, you'll probably be fairly contagious. Maybe 3 or 4 days later. So it kind of depends on how you're getting around and how early you're coming and how long you're staying. But it is a risk, and you kind of can see how the numbers are going to go. But I think the numbers are just going to go up. I mean, if you just listen to the news, you hear more sports teams are running into trouble, and there's more delays and football games. Alabama, I think Nick Saban is positive, and one of his associate coaches are positive. And so, you know, he's kind of remotely coaching. But, you know, I think everybody already got exposed to him before he knew he was positive, type of a thing. So once the virus gets into something like a football team, it seems that it's hard to control because, you know, people that are asymptomatic can transmit the virus. And by the time they figure out who is infected and who isn't, then they have a problem. And an example of that was, you know, what happened at the White House. And Chris Christie just got released from the hospital.
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard the details. I think he was in the ICU for like seven days.
Yeah.
And he said that he shouldn't have taken the mask off. He said he'd been real careful, and he went to the Rose Garden, and he was part of the debate prep. And so he had interactions there, and he wasn't wearing a mask in either location. And then he got infected, and he was thinking, or he was told, or probably both, that, you know, they test all the time, and everybody at the function had been tested and tested negative. And the problem with that is, the White House was using that Abbott rapid test, and the rapid test has the advantage is they give you a result in 15 minutes, and has a disadvantage is that false negatives are pretty common. So the fact that you're negative doesn't mean that you're really negative. And they've already shown those results with Stephen Miller's wife, that she was coughing in front of reporters, and she said, "Oh, don't worry about it. It's not COVID," because she had been tested that morning and was negative, but it was COVID, and it got worse, and he subsequently got retested, and it was confirmed. So that was one example where she was definitely positive when she got tested, and the test said she was negative if you can believe the results. And then it was the same thing with Hope Hicks. Hope Hicks was negative in the morning and then started being symptomatic by evening and ended up self.
Isn't that a pretty quick onset of symptoms after testing negative?
No. Cause
or was that a false negative? And she was already percolating.
Negative. She was being tested at the White House. That was a rapid test. That's the whole point. The whole point is the rapid test says you're negative, and within 24 hours, you're symptomatic, and you usually have the highest concentrations of virus 1 or 2 days before you're symptomatic. So that would mean that she definitely, she almost certainly had virus when she was tested, and she should have had a pretty high level of virus, and the test said she was negative. And that, you know, I discussed this test right when they started talking about it because other researchers had done side by side. They had taken tests that they had, samples that they had tested by PCR and they were positive. And then they took the same sample that was positive by PCR and they put it in the rapid test and it was negative. So, I mean, they knew it was positive if the test was sensitive enough, and they knew that the Abbott test didn't have the same type of sensitivity as the PCR test. So it's likely to give you a false positive if you're talking about the ability to detect the virus. And that's what the White House is using. And now Trump is saying, well, yeah, we were using it, but we weren't, like, I wasn't getting tested every day, which is essentially the opposite of what he had been saying. I mean, he had been
saying, said for a long time he was being tested every day. Oh, yeah.
Because I get tested every day, and some days I get tested two or three times. And he made it, you know, sound like there was no reason for a mask because he knew he was negative. And, you know, the evidence from the Rose Garden is, I mean, there's the one reporter that's keeping tabs on it. And as of this morning, actually, I should probably look again. He had 40 people on there that were positive that had been
40
at the Rose Garden event. And yeah, it's still 40.
All right, let me switch over to remdesivir. Yes or no? Who says little or no effect?
It depends what you want to use it as. The WHO did a big test that they involved, I think it was something like 405 hospitals, and they tested, I believe, four different drugs. They did remdesivir, they did hydroxychloroquine, they did interferon, and they did another cytokine. And the endpoints they were looking at was death and I think it was going on a ventilator, and it might have been going into the ICU. I'm not sure about that one, but I'm pretty sure it was a ventilator and death. So they were looking at the ability to make a difference in severe cases, and they tested four drugs, and none of them showed any benefit. So the only drug that they've had positive for severe cases has been the
Regeneron?
Steroid. No.
Yes. Okay. That's the one Trump, we don't know if Trump's still on it or not, but yes.
Yeah, well, I don't think he's on it. They usually don't keep him on it that long, but there's a good chance that is the reason he felt better. I mean, he said that it was the monoclonal antibody because, he had a fever. I mean, that came out from the, his dexamethasone is the only one that's been shown a benefit, and that was for advanced cases that
are they commonly using dexamethasone on advanced cases, do we know, or is that a quasi-experimental thing too?
No, dexamethasone's been around for like 40 years or so. It's very inexpensive, and I think it's routinely used for patients in the hospital under, you know, this, I don't even know what it's designated.
Isn't it to protect from a cytokine response? That's the whole idea of corticosteroids?
The idea of the dexamethasone, right, is to tamp down the immune response. It's tricky because, if you give it at the wrong time, then you knock down the ability to attack the virus. But it's pretty much limited to the more advanced cases that aren't doing that well. So they've already kind of lost the battle with the virus, and they may not be doing well because they've already generated enough activity so that they've started to cause collateral damage, and the dexamethasone works then. If they give the dexamethasone early, then they'll block the response against the virus. Now, Trump got it relatively early, at least early after he was diagnosed. It's still unclear, when he really got infected and when he last had a negative test, and you know, he was asked about the day of the debate, because the rules for the debate was that you had tested negative within 3 days of the debate. And so they specifically asked him whether he was tested the day of the debate, and he said he didn't know. He said maybe yes, maybe no. And he'd been asked previously whether he had been tested within 3 days of the debate, and they wouldn't answer that either. So it's really unclear when he was actually infected initially. And there's probably a good chance that he was infected, you know, before the Rose Garden, or maybe at the Rose Garden.
That's my guess. I would suggest prior to, but that's just
right.
Me.
So the point is, by the time he was actually officially confirmed, he might have already been infected for a week. And so he got all of the drugs relatively soon after infection, but after a
formal diagnosis.
I think he might have been positive on the rapid test, and then they did the PCR test. And so when he made the announcement at like at 1 a.m, that was after it had been confirmed by the PCR test. But
right.
You know, that could have been a week after he was actually infected, and so the treatment may have been relatively late after infection, that he just hadn't been treated or tested. And that's the reason. I mean, he kind of hinted that he had a fever of 101, 102, that he had pneumonia. There was something, you know, his x-rays weren't that clear or something. But, you know, he wouldn't get a whole lot beyond that. But the point I'm making is that when he got the drugs, he got the drugs almost one right after the other. And so when he got the dexamethasone, he already had remdesivir and the two monoclonal antibodies by Regeneron. And so those two treatments are both antivirals, and they're attacking the virus. So he didn't necessarily need that much of his immune system attacking the virus, because they already had two different drugs doing that. And therefore, the dexamethasone may have been useful for tamping down his immune system, but it may have just made him feel better. I mean, that's what steroids do. I mean, they give you a lot of energy. And you know, his idea that he got, that the improvement was due to Regeneron, I think was based on how he felt. And the dexamethasone alone would make him feel better, even if he really wasn't better, and because the dexamethasone will also suppress the a fever, so it'll get his fever down, and he'll have more energy, and he'll feel better. And he could still have a reasonable viral load, but it's being masked by the dexamethasone.
Right. Okay,
so
I got to do
one. Clear.
Yeah, I got to do one other thing here. We just got 2 minutes. People who get sick, they get a cold, they may get the flu. Let's say you've got a sore throat, you got a runny nose, you got a bit of a cough. Nothing in your lungs. It's in your throat. It's kind of like a cold. You have a fever of 101. What should people do if those symptoms present? That sounds like a cold kind of a thing to me. So they're going to have a lot of trouble trying to keep their worries in check. Usually, coronavirus is a dryish cough and a low, low fever, right. 99 something, 100 point something.
No, the fever gets pretty high. I mean, the fever can get high. The cough is, like you said, it's more of a dry cough. There actually was a program that I don't know what its status. I heard about it several months ago. That you could diagnose it over the online. As long as you had a microphone, you could just cough, and they would say whether that was a COVID cough or not, just from the sound of the cough.
Kind of presumptuous. That's strange.
But that's kind of experimental. Yeah, mm-hmm. Like I said, there's a test that I think is already available. They're really tests for both flu and for COVID. And so you're probably going to need a test to get any kind of assurance.
You're talking about a home test?
Not yet. Well, it depends on how you define a home test. I think that Quest is now starting to mail out, FedExing you a swab, so that if you can take it at home. They send you the swab, you swab your nose, you put it back into the transport fluid, screw on the cap, and drop it in the mailbox, and it goes back to them. So you really don't have to leave your home, but it's essentially you're doing the test, which is how they're doing a lot of the testing now anyway, that when you drive to the center so you don't get out of your car, you actually do the swabbing. It's not that they put on PPEs and have to change it for each person type of thing.
I see.
So they can test a lot quicker there. And so there is a home version of that. Another version that you kind of get the test results at home also, I don't know. I think there's a saliva test that's in the works, but I'm not sure how available it is yet. And there will be home tests, but unfortunately, some of these home tests will be along the same lines as the White House.
Quick result, 50-50.
So
the old 50-50 test.
But the sensitivity isn't really there. So you almost have to take it daily to get any confidence that one negative is not conclusive.
All right. I got it set up for the next hour. We got overseas guests. Thank you for the update. Have a good weekend. This is going to get a lot worse before it gets better, I'm afraid.
Next week should be interesting. Okay, good weekend. Talk to you then.
Thanks, Henry. Okay, we'll be right back with our big hour coming up next. Don't miss it. Catherine Austin Fitz and the man himself, Bernard Grover, who has been covering Q from the beginning. We're going to tell you things about QAnon that some of you may not want to hear. I just thought of that. We're going to tell you the truth coming up next.